And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, there used to be a joke that left-wingers in the Third World told. It went like this. Why is it that there'll never be a coup in the United States? And the answer was, because there's no American embassy in Washington. But it turns out that there's a White House in Washington. And this week, we saw an inept, incompetently executed, but unmistakable coup attempted by the Trump forces to reverse the election, cancel the election, and stay in power. I mean, everybody's talking about it.
And it failed.
But I don't. But we need to discuss, you know, what it portends. Right. What's the meaning of it all?
Well, I'll tell you. You know, for years I've been talking about the fact that the Republican Party had developed this idea that only they were the proper people to run the United States and the government, and only their ideas and only their policies and only their laws should be enacted. And Jamil Bowie at the New York Times this week outlined, in fact, the same thing. He pointed out that in places where Democrats had won gubernatorial elections, like North Carolina and Wisconsin, Kentucky, the Republicans would gain power through all these processes of gerrymandering and rigging elections and voter suppression, then decided that they were going to strip the governors of as many powers as they could to prevent them from doing anything that jeopardized this Republican rule. But well,
and they did that. They successfully
did
that.
They did that. They did that. And on the national level, we saw a lot of this talk and banter about the same thing that only Republican, you know, since the Newt Gingrich days. But and it was a take no prisoners attitude. It was that Democrats are our enemy. They're our enemy of the country. What we saw this week, though, was a different means of trying to take power. This emanated not from the party infrastructure so much as it did from the White House and the authoritarian part of the party that was promoted by Steve Bannon and attempted to be carried out by the person they found best able to do that, which was Donald Trump. What they didn't figure out was that Trump is basically an incompetent when it comes to managing anything. We've learned over the years that the New York Times said he lost more money as a businessman than anybody in the history of the world. We saw his incompetence in putting together people in the cabinet who could do, although they knew how to ruin things, they didn't know how to run things, so to speak.
They weren't put in there to run things. They were put in there to dissolve things. Bannon's program was get rid of the state. Get rid of the regulatory administrative state. Right. Because that's what big business wants. They don't want regulation.
And they put people in the courts who also are against the administrative state. And then we saw, a year or so ago, I guess, where John Bolton, they wanted to manufacture a coup d'etat in Venezuela to get rid of these communist, these socialists who are really no threat to anything but their own people. And they failed in that. So this week, what happened is over...
And they were shocked that they failed in that, if you remember.
Yeah, it was sort of like the people that put together the Bay of Pigs. All we have to do is land on the ground and the people are going to rise up and support us. And
right. These people, like all sales hucksters, They believe their own hucksterism.
Yes. Yeah. Donald Trump, the one thing he's been most successful at is being a con man. And his technique is pretty well shown. He repeats things, he repeats things, he repeats things. And he until he himself believes that nothing else is true, and his people only believe it's true. And what they try to do and what they've done through this, I don't want to call it underground, but this alternate set of facts and alternate social media and alternate reality, is that they only get this information, so they believe all of it is true, where belief and feelings are the truth rather than the truth itself. And of course,
but Trump doesn't believe it's true. Trump knows it's not true. One of the people who quit in the last couple of weeks was this Alyssa Farrow, who was Trump's communications director, and she gave an interview to USA Today and to CNN. And in that interview, she said the reason she quit was because she knew that they were busy promoting a lie that this election was being stolen, because she said the results of the election tracked almost accurately to 100% what their own internal polling before the election told them was going to happen.
But they don't.
They knew it. They expected it. And they did, but they weren't determined. They were determined not to have to give up power.
Yeah. As late as Friday, Trump was.
As late as today.
As late as Friday, Trump was out there saying, "We won by a landslide." You listen to his acolytes, and they say they parrot the same messages. What of course happened is that he lost. That 81 million beat 74 million. The danger, of course, is that 74 million voted for him, the shock. But in any event.
And more than 50% of them do believe that his lie, that he didn't lose.
But, the Democrats not only flipped back the three states that Hillary had lost, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, but they. And they held on to Nevada, but they also flipped Arizona and Georgia, which drove Trump absolutely crazy. And then Georgia, of course, something else happened. They had three recounts in Georgia. They all came out the same way, including a hand recount. And then they did an audit. You know, they always kept moving the goalposts. Well, it wasn't. It was the machines, and then it wasn't the machines. If the hand count, well, it wasn't the hand count. There were false signatures, and they did the audits, and nothing ever showed to back this stuff up. So what Trump tried was an end around with the Secretary of State in Georgia, and we all heard the phone call. It's the mob boss phone call. Doesn't quite come out and say exactly. And this is what Michael Cohen testified to. He says he never directly tells you. He just lets you know what he wants. Or what he's demanding through code words and through insinuations. And he.
You don't need Michael Cohen. You got Robert De Niro. You can, I mean, Trump just parrots the movies. And it's like the gangsters who all saw The Godfather and started talking like The Godfather.
Yeah. But anyway, and he called the Secretary of State of Georgia, and give that man credit. Because his life was threatened, his family's lives were threatened, and he basically held fast. And he said, "Mr. President, your problem is you've got wrong information. You lost the election here, and we've certified it. And we can't find 11,970 votes that you know. We're not going to rig this." And that drove Trump absolutely crazy. And then of course.
It reminded me of what our own lieutenant governor said at one point, speaking about the same issue. And he said, look, there is no village in Pennsylvania with 50,000 Trump voters that didn't get counted.
Yeah. Right? Of course, he did say that the only voter fraud that we found in Pennsylvania were two or three cases of people trying to vote dead people or vote twice for Trump.
For Trump. Exactly.
Yeah. But in any event, and then to compound the situation in Georgia, we had something that I've said I'll believe it when I see it. So now I'm believing it. They actually flipped the two Senate seats there on election night in November. You know, Georgia has this runoff system, which was meant to prevent blacks from really gaining power, that if you didn't get 50% of the vote on election night, you had to have a runoff. And no
50% plus one.
50% plus one. And no Democrat had ever won a runoff there. And on election night, Jonathan Ossoff, who was facing Dave Perdue, was down by 88,000 votes. Perdue's count was barely under 50%, only because there was a third party, a Libertarian, there that siphoned off a few votes to keep him under that. And Ossoff flipped the result. And then Kelly Loeffler, who was there running against Reverend Warnock, she lost. Her initial race was a different race because there were two prominent Republicans running there, and she came in ahead of the other one. But everybody thought that the registration and everything favored her. And now, of course, a southern state is sending a Jew and a black man to the Congress, to the Senate. And that's going to be, it's going to make Mitch McConnell minority leader and Chuck Schumer the majority leader, which is going to be a big difference. And that also drove the Republicans crazy, and it drove Trump crazy.
Well, before you get too excited about that, wasn't the vice president of the Confederacy Jewish?
The Secretary of State was Jewish. The vice
Vice
president of the Confederacy was Alexander Stevens. Right. He wasn't, but the Secretary of the State, it was from Georgia, I believe, as well.
And from Georgia, yes, he was from Georgia.
Yeah. Right. I'm trying to remember his name, but and he kept the Confederacy going.
Judah Benjamin?
Yeah.
Was it Judah Benjamin?
Yeah. But in any event, so we'll see what happens there. But then, of course, Plan B was to execute this insurrection to stop the vote from being counted by the Congress. We have this multiple step process. The election is decided by the states. The secretaries of state of the states have to certify each state. They then go to the Electoral College. The electors have to vote. The electors are supposed to follow the certification. The Supreme Court last year, by the way, said that, or this year, earlier this year, they came out with a decision saying you can't be a rogue elector. The electors have to be bound by the state law. And then after that, there's the official count that occurs in January, on January 6th, by congressional act, where the presiding officer, who is the vice president of the United States, the current one, merely reads the results that come from the secretaries of state offices into the record, and then declares the count to be official and who the winner is. And Trump spent the last couple of weeks trying to pressure Mike Pence into, in effect, not counting the votes for Joe Biden, instead saying that it was Donald Trump's votes. And Pence wouldn't go along with that. So they...
it's not so much that Pence wouldn't go along with it. He actually would have gone along with it, but he went to the Office of Special Counsel, which is the White House legal office, and asked them to give him a ruling so that he could rely on it. And much to his amazement, the ruling was, you don't have the right to reject anything that comes to you. Your only authority is to open the paper
and read the results
and read it out.
The Oscars, where you read the winner of the best picture and you don't get to choose which one it is.
That's right. You can't say, if you're opening that Oscar envelope, I didn't like that movie, I'm not doing
it. Although a couple of years ago, didn't they have a screw up on that? It gave them the wrong envelope.
They gave him the wrong envelope, but he read what was in the envelope.
Right. So that wasn't.
So, but let's unpack this for a second. The law is clear. The law says what you just described. What Trump and Giuliani and the ones working with them were doing was to try to prevent that law from being carried out. Correct?
Yes.
That's sedition.
That's sedition.
That is the textbook version, the modern textbook legal definition of sedition, which means Cruz was involved, Hawley was involved, Giuliani was involved, Trump was involved, and plenty more. Not eight of the nine Republican congressmen from Pennsylvania, they were involved. All of them that acted with this high-minded crap, we just want to make sure that only legal votes were counted. And all of them who made that argument were involved in sedition.
Of course, the only legal votes were Republican votes.
Well, naturally.
Yeah. So they went through all of this. And knowing that that was going to fail, Trump called on his troops, the bikers and the truck drivers and whatever that he talked about, and the Proud Boys, stand by. And he foretold this. He said, come January 6th, it's going to be wild in Washington. And it certainly was.
And he was doing this for 2 months. It wasn't the spur of the moment. This was something he worked at. All of these guys worked at for two months. And they did it publicly. They didn't do it secretly. They did it on the internet.
Right. And so comes January 6th, and we have a rally at which Rudy Giuliani gets up and tells people we should have trial by combat.
And by the way, getting to this rally was publicly arranged. There were, I know for a fact that there were busloads from Scranton, among other
200
places.
200 people. Frank Scavo, who runs for office all the time and loses almost all the time, put it together. And there were people from all over. Of course, one of the hotels in Washington, one of the more economical hotels, decided to close down. That's where these guys were going to stay. They came in.
And they got, as I understand it, the police said that there were 30,000 to 40,000 people who came in for this thing. And I heard that on a police spokesman on one of the networks. But I spoke to a guy that I know who works for the police and said, what was the estimate? And he said 30 to 40,000. Of course, they're saying they had 2 million.
Well, from Trump's mouth to their brain. But anyway, they got there, and some of them were ready for action. They had these wrist restraints. They had people who were supposedly looking for Vice President Pence, that they were going to do to him what the Michigan insurrectionists tried to do to Governor Whitmer. They had people with Molotov cocktails.
There was a whole van load of Molotov cocktails that were discovered two blocks from the Capitol.
Pipe bombs. I was, Washington is not an open carry state, not an open carry place. City. But I was surprised that so few of them were carrying arms. Although there is one congresswoman who said that she's going to, from Colorado, who said she's going to openly carry an arm in the, a sidearm in the Capitol. I don't know what happened with her. But anyhow, they got up, they got ginned up. Trump came out and talked about marching to the Capitol. Josh Hawley was out there giving them support, senator from Missouri. And lo and behold, they marched on the Capitol.
And Don Jr. and Eric, they got up, they talked, and they ranted.
Yep. And then they marched on the Capitol, which for some reason, I guess because most of these people were not black, was not very heavily defended. You didn't see the same kind of, you didn't see the National Guard, you didn't see the Capitol Police in their riot gear, you didn't see the numbers of people from the police out there. And this supposedly law and order crowd and back the blue, back the police crowd, then proceeded to be unlawful and disorderly, and they stormed the Capitol building. First time the building has been breached since the War of 1812.
Well, let's be clear. This was not an accident. No. I mean, there are people who are saying, well, how did this happen? Failure of intelligence, blah, blah, blah. Let's be clear. The Capitol Police Force is a force with 2,000 officers and 300 civilian employees and an annual budget of $460 million. It has every kind of specialized grouping, hazmat grouping, bomb squads, VIP. They've got plans for every conceivable kind of demonstration, and it is no way possible that without an executive decision from the leadership of the Capitol Police that the building could not have been defended. And by the way, all of this, the $460 million and the 2,300 employees, they're there to defend three buildings on 58 acres, less than a third the size of Central Park in New York City. I mean, it's preposterous. There are no coincidences, not like that.
No.
We know that the police force throughout the country, it's the police unions, the police leadership, are Trumpist people. He's been parading police people for 4 years, crowing about how they support him.
Yeah.
They were part of his coup.
Yeah. And they were also, should have been on alert, because there were talks about the Iranians taking vengeance for the killing of Soleimani, which happened a year ago. There were threats coming from Iran. And, as far as the Capitol Police, though, the backup is the National Guard, but the mayor of Washington doesn't have any authority over that. That comes from the White House. And guess who deliberately withheld calling out the National Guard?
Yeah, Mr. Trump.
The governor of Virginia said he would have sent his National Guard, in fact, wound up doing so belatedly, and same thing with the governor of Maryland and Pennsylvania. Tom Wolf said that he sent a couple hundred National Guard people down, but only after this spectacle wherein you saw some of the real supporters of Donald Trump. You had one guy walking around in a Camp Auschwitz t-shirt. You had people in all sorts of regalia and gear sitting in the seats of where the Speaker of the House sits, and in the Senate, them stealing stuff, taking stuff out, and nobody was getting arrested, or very few were getting arrested.
There were 5 hours they had unrestricted access to and rampaging around the Capitol building. Even when the cops got there, the reinforcements got there, they were standing in a park a block away. And the coup makers, the rioters, they were standing with them.
And they walked right past them.
Passing in front of them. Yeah, they were just standing. It was like a day in the park. They're taking pictures. They're chatting. And there's hundreds and hundreds of cops in serried ranks. They don't do anything.
Sure.
And they were, so A, first they weren't there, and B, when they got there, they didn't do anything.
Yeah.
There were fewer people arrested at the time of this attempted coup, 13, than were normally arrested in any given New York Giants football game. The average number of people arrested in a New York Giants football game is 21.
You know, there was a fellow on the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania who, by the name of Seamus McCafferty, and the reason he got to the Supreme Court was he was a judge in Philadelphia, a lower court judge, and he would go down to the Philadelphia Eagles games, and he would arraign the people that they were arresting at the games for public drunkenness, fighting, and things like that. And he made a name for himself, and he used that to get himself elected to the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania. you just reminded me of that type of thing. But as you said, nobody was getting arrested. This was not what they would have done in Black Lives Matter or other things.
No left-wing demonstration, no anti-war demonstration, no union demonstration. The bonus marches in the 1930s. Any group of people that come from left-wing politics, working-class politics, get the kid glove treatment that the fascists get.
Yeah, I mean,
because the cops are fascists.
Yeah. You know, for 4 years, Robert E. Lee and the armies of Northern Virginia and the Confederacy were kept out of the Capitol, kept out of Washington, D.C. And these guys, within a couple of hours, went through the Capitol with Confederate flags. Please.
There's a photo of a guy with a Confederate flag standing in front of a portrait of Charles Sumner, the great abolitionist senator.
Right. Talk about desecration.
I mean, it's quite disgusting.
You know, we should get back. One thing that happened this week in Pennsylvania was the same kind of action. There was a contested election out in western Pennsylvania where the incumbent senator by the name of Brewster was certified the winner by something like 69 votes. Very close. His opponent is appealing it to the court. Probably won't to happen, but he was certified. And we got to the
But it's interesting what the appeal is all about. The appeal says that there were several hundred votes that were counted that shouldn't mail-in votes and that they shouldn't be counted. That was brought to the court, and it went all the way up the Pennsylvania court system. And the Pennsylvania court system had ruled that those ballots were legal to be counted. They were cast legally, and it was right to count them. So this Republican who was defeated says, no, they shouldn't be counted, even though he had already lost the case.
It was a she.
Whoever.
Yeah. But so we went through that, and the Republicans who were in charge of the chamber decided that they would not seat this one senator until another round of court action had been taken. There is some precedent to that. But what they had done previously was that they would seat the senator because they were certified. And then if the courts reversed it, they would then unseat the senator. This time they decided we're not going to seat him at all, which raised objections from the presiding officer, who's the lieutenant governor, John Fetterman. So the Republican leader in the Senate then decided to remove the presiding officer and stage, in effect, a coup d'etat there. And they threw out the lieutenant governor from presiding over the Senate for the day, which I don't think they're allowed to do. Fetterman, to his credit, decided not to invoke his more physical remedy. Remember, he's, about 6'7", 300 pounds, and whatever.
I don't know if he's 300 pounds, but he's pretty big.
And what he's going to, I think he's going to, well, he announced that he's going to have a committee now looking into running for Pat Toomey's seat in the Senate come next year, in 2022, which I've been predicting. This, I think, will get him credit. You know, they're afraid of him. They really are. I think he's the most formidable foe. But we have that. And then, we should know that later.
So in other words, they were able to do in Pennsylvania what Trump was trying to do, but couldn't get away with. In Washington.
Right. Now Trump has another problem, of course, that he late on Friday, he got thrown off of Twitter, permanently suspended. And some of the other right-wing sites, like Parler, has been taken off of Google. And YouTube has taken Bannon down. And some of the others are being taken down now. I'm not giving them credit so much as saying that they've read the tea leaves. Now that the Democrats are in charge of both the Senate and the House, and you have that question about Rule 230 or Section 230 of the Federal Communications Act that might hold them responsible for things that are said on their websites. Now, all of a sudden, Mark Zuckerberg's running a little bit scared.
Well, he should be.
He should be. And someone else that should be scared is Trump's lawyer, Sidney Powell, who's lost I don't know how many court cases, but now she's been sued by Dominion for defamation. And for over $1 billion.
Well, all she has to do is prove that what she said was true.
Which she couldn't do in court. So, well, now she's going to be in court again, and she, we'll see what she has.
All right, that's it for this week. There's too much. But we'll have another week of chaos ahead of us.
We'll see. There may be an impeachment.
American carnage is how we started. American carnage is how we finish.
Yes. Stay safe.
See you next week.
Bye.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.